Welcome, dear listeners, to today's segment of Afternoon Satsang, and the theme is Awake, Arise, and Stop Not Till the Goal Can Be Reached, if I can borrow the words of Swami Vivekananda. Though this is the week which is part of the fortnight for the study of the Conversations with Sai, based on the response we got for the last week's satsang, and for the sake of continuity, we thought that we will take one more week out and go through the Sri Sathya Sai Suprabhatam with its meaning and inner significance. And indeed, as we saw it last week, it is a hymn that is there for bringing about an awakening in us. And today, we'll be going through a few more stanzas in the Suprabhatam. Last week, after the elaborate introduction, we managed to go through only the first stanza. So, the remaining stanzas, as many as possible, that is what we will be diving in today. So it is with great eagerness, interest, love and joy and gratitude that we offer ourselves at the lotus feet of beloved Bhagwan, and Sai Ram to all our listeners, and Sai Ram to Brother Prem as well.
Sai Ram, Arvind, and Sai Ram to all our listeners. As we said, as you mentioned, I think the response for this satsang has been good, and it's been a long time coming. I mean, after we started, a couple of listeners said that we had asked for this sometime before. I don't recollect receiving that before, but we are happy that it is something that is useful. And as we mentioned last week, this is how the day starts in Prashanti Nilayam. And even when we did the satsang on a daily schedule of a Sai student or a schedule given by Swami, the reason why I think that got a good response from our listeners is all of us in our life are trying to find out some way of connecting to Swami, connecting to Prashanti Nilayam, be it by tuning to in the live bhajans that they happen in Prashanti Nilayam, or listening to Swami's discourses, or even be it, you know, singing bhajans when you're traveling or whatever it is. We're all finding ways of connecting to Prashanti Nilayam through reading, through listening, through whatever we do. So in that sense, when we say the day starts with Suprabhatam, I think to understand this concept of Suprabhatam itself is very, very important. And as we see, as we saw last week and as we're going to see even today, it's much deeper than the idea of, you know, here is Swami who's sleeping and we're waking him up. Because one thing which many, many people tell us who had the opportunity to, sleep in Swami's mandir, I think one of the teachers was once saying that they had the opportunity to stay for just about a few days briefly in Trai Vrindavan where Swami was staying. And he said, yes, Swami never sleeps. You know, even the slightest of sound, Swami will wake up. And many, many times he says that we would wake up in the night and we would see that Swami would just be lying, sometimes his eyes open. So in that sense, Swami doesn't need to be woken up at all. In fact, there is a very beautiful shloka in Bhagavad Gita where Krishna says that the wise one is one who is awake when everybody sleeps and sleeps when everyone is awake. And of course, the explanation of that is we are awake when the senses are stimulated, right? When something attractive comes, you kind of wake up to that moment, or something stimulating comes, you know, maybe something which angers you, you kind of wake up to that moment. But we are all asleep to the Atma. And Swami would say it's the other way around. The Jnani is one who is awake to the Atma, but is not touched by the stimuli that comes through the senses. So when a yogi is one who is an ascent of man himself, can be described as somebody who is awake when everybody is asleep. Swami would say the Lord is somebody who never sleeps, because he is always aware and always awake to that consciousness within. So there is the concept of waking up Swami is meaningless in that sense. So it has to be the idea of waking up the Swami within.
That is so beautiful. In fact, it takes me back to the golden old days in the 1940s of the Pathamandiram. And we know how Swami would actually consent to sleep so that the devotees would rest. those were days when Swami had almost no privacy, minimal privacy, and everybody's schedule was centered around the physical presence of Bhagwan, and therefore Swami would call for periods of rest so that the devotees could rest. Even then, Swami would be the first one to wake up. They would all sleep in the courtyard, and Swami's cot would be in the center. On one side, the gents, on the other side, the ladies. And even there, Swami would be the first to get up, because at night, Swami would hold on to his torch and ensure the security of the ashram. So, in a physical sense too, Swami would be awake when all are sleeping, and he would be the first one to rise in the morning, so that the proceedings in the Pathamandiram can begin. We had played the first stanza and the second stanza. Now I think we will be going into that. So we will play the second stanza and then take up the word by word meaning and the inner meaning of it.
Maybe before we begin with the second stanza, probably we should do what we promised that we will do last time. We said we'll speak a little about the person who composed the Satya Sai Suprabhatam, Sri Tirumalachar.
Yes.
Who was the scholar in the court of the Venkatagiri Raja, right?
Exactly. And he was a Telugu Pandit, a scholar, and he was an Asthana Vidwan. Asthana Vidwan is like, you know, I think this also we had discussed last week, where he was salaried actually. Salaried, and this was the way the kings promoted art and culture, so that this knowledge could be grown without the scholar having to worry about his livelihood and other things. So he was employed by the kingdom, by the king in the king's court. He was a scholar there, and he had actually taken a vacation, and those were the 1950s. So nobody knew where he was. There was no way of communicating. The fastest way of communication was possibly the telegram, and the telegram also was not available in every village, every place. So once when he had gone like this, Swami was at the Venkatagiri kingdom, and out of the blue, Swami mentioned that there is a Telugu Pandit Tirumalachar in your kingdom. He is stuck in the floods. It will not be a problem. He will come back safe to the kingdom. Now this came as an amazement to everyone, because first of all, nobody had mentioned to Swami about the existence of Tirumalachar. And the second thing is, though he was on leave, nobody in the kingdom had an idea as to where he had gone. So Swami had actually said this, that he is stuck in the floods, but he'll come back safe. Of course, there was a general awareness of the cyclone and the floods that had hit the Andhra Pradesh coastline, the Orissa coastline, basically the entire eastern coastline of India, which is on the Bay of Bengal, is more often hit by cyclones and typhoons, and a lot of flooding happens, because the Bay of Bengal, compared to the Arabian Sea, is supposed to be more rough, more furious, and more prone to the vicissitudes of weather and climate. A few days later, actually Tirumalachar returns to the court, and when he returns, when he hears what Swami had said, he is thrilled personally, because he has no idea, I mean, he has never had an interaction with Bhagwan before. And whatever Swami had said was perfect. He had indeed been caught up in the floods, and indeed through mysterious ways he had been rescued out from the floods, and he had arrived back at the court. So when he went to meet Swami, the first thing Swami said is that, "I am your Devi. I am your Devi." Now this was another revelation, because Swami physically couldn't have known that Tirumalachar was a Devi Upasaka. He was the one who was worshipping Devi. Now, Tirumalachar had come to Swami out of curiosity to ask how on earth did he know where he was and what was his predicament. But even before he could open his mouth, this is what Swami says. And when Swami has clasped Tirumalachar, Tirumalachar doesn't see Swami, but sees the form of the Devi that he has worshipped all his life. And therefore, the transformation is instantaneous. He instantly falls at the feet of Bhagwan and, you know, clasps his feet, never wanting to let go of it, because this is the form of the Lord that he has worshipped all the while. Later on, Swami also materialized a pendant with Devi on it and gave it to him. You know, and that is how Tirumalachar actually became a devotee of Bhagwan, decided to dedicate his life, you know, in composing poems, composing the Suprabhatam, and all this for Bhagwan, because he saw in Swami the Devi that he has worshipped all his life. I think we had another discussion during one of the satsangs that Swami doesn't tell everyone to worship him, but he encourages everyone to be loyal to the name and form that we have held dear all our life. And we saw how Seshagiri Rao, the first priest of Prashanti Nilayam, the first person to take aarti of Bhagwan other than Bhagwan himself, because in the earlier days Swami himself used to do the aarti. So even Seshagiri Rao, who was a devout Shiva bhakta, had darshan as Lord Shiva, and he began to revere Swami because he felt that he is worshipping Shiva when he worships Swami. So also Tirumalachar was convinced that he is worshipping his mother goddess when he is worshipping Swami, and that's how he became a devotee of Bhagwan. Little wonder that he has composed the Suprabhatam of Swami. In fact, there is the other episode also wherein, you know, Swami had asked Tirumalachar, because he was a scholar, he had asked him about what is the average lifespan of a person in the Venkatagiri kingdom. And those days, with whatever level of medical growth or medical progress that had been achieved, the lifespan was about 50-56 years. So that is what Tirumalachar said, and he told Swami that it's about 56 years. Swami assured him, you don't worry, that is the average lifespan. You will have a long and fulfilled life. And I think till the ripe old age of extending beyond 80, Tirumalachar lived, and he lived a very fulfilled life naturally, because most of it was with Bhagwan. If we search the Satisai Speaks, we come across a couple of references that Bhagwan is making to Tirumalachar, and both those references are in glorious and wonderful terms. One of it we referred to last week, where Swami is awarding him with a shawl and expressing his appreciation, for having written the Satyam Shivam Sundaram in Telugu. So that in brief is about this great devotee and scholar named Tirumalachar.
Right, and also I think in the early 60s and 50s, many, many times Swami's discourse was preceded by his discourse. And we all know that the Vidwan Mahasabha actually began in the Venkatagiri. Swami Kingdom. Participated in the Divine Life Society's convention in Venkatagiri. So all of those scholarly audiences were addressed by Tirumalachar. Many, many discourses in Prashanti Nilayam. During festivals like Ramanavami or Shivratri, there were addresses of Tirumalachar, and he was the one who has composed this. And as we can see, it is a scholarly composition. I mean, there is no doubt about that, because the words have been very beautifully curated and selected and put together. So I think with that introduction, probably we'll go to the second paragraph of the Suprabhatam. We had gone through the first one. The first one, just to probably refresh your memory, is that starts with Ishwarambasuta Shriman Purva Sandhya Pravartate Uttishta Satya Saisha Kartavyam Devamanikam. That was the one we covered. We'll go to the second paragraph, and then we'll give you the meaning after that.
Uttishto Uttishta Partisha Uttishta Jagati Pate Uttishtha Karuna Purna Loka Mangala Siddhaye.
So that was the second paragraph. I'll probably give you a brief meaning of that. The meaning of that paragraph goes, awake, awake, O Lord of Parthi, O Lord of the entire universe and mankind. Awake, O compassionate Lord, so that the world attains auspiciousness, happiness, prosperity, welfare, and blessings.
You know, when they say the Lord of Puttaparthi, this term Puttaparthi is so beautiful, and it has multiple meanings. And Swami is an expert at giving meanings like this. For instance, you know, I remember how it was said that white field. In Marathi, white is Pandhara. Pandhara rang is called white. And field, the field, the Kshetra, is called as a Pura. So, Swami had indicated how white field is Pandharapura. You know, it is the Kshetra of Lord Krishna. And indeed, we have seen how Sai Krishna played his leelas at his Brindavanam in Whitefield. So also Puttaparthi has a beautiful meaning, and instead of me going into that, I thought it would be wonderful to play a discourse clip, a discourse which Swami delivered on the occasion of Vishu at Brindavan. I think it was on the 14th of April 2002. Swami beautifully describes Puttaparthi, and I think it's best to hear it in his own words. We'll hear to that and then continue the discussion.
Pravahinchune puri paridiga payalai,
that which proceeds eternally,
Chitravati nadi vichitragatulu,
and that has been the way the Chitravati flows,
karune pattana kalyana karamuga chuttunu melaina chutatarulu,
and we find the kind of beautiful trees all around that hospitable city,
kaapundrune podi kadalalgiti endu parvati sharulu eppudu payakunda,
and we find the presiding deities Parvati Parameshwara over there,
mandaramani galutinchi mendu mahima,
and we find the mister in the glory,
chikkavadiyaru gattina cherivu toda, chikkavadiyaru gattina cherivu toda,
and it we find the kind of all the personal
tirigitti bhuvanamencha,
and it stands for all the glory,
vasana chaatuneepuram aa puttapuramu anedi,
and that Puttaparthi stands for all this glory and for all this grandeur.
Puttaparthi ante emtani artham,
what is the meaning of Puttaparthi?
Parthi anaga
parthi
prakashame
means light,
puttinatvanti okka prakashame Puttaparthi,
and it is the place, the beacon of light,
deeniki puramanta Puttavardhini ani peru,
earlier it was called Puttavardhini,
ekkada chuchina puttalu perigeetvantivi,
and you find ant hills putta everywhere,
ee puttal lopala paavulu anta veligeetvantivi,
and you find snakes over there,
kaani దాని వల్లే పుట్టవర్ధిని అని పెట్టారు.
సో ఇట్స్ నేమ్డ్ అస్ పుట్టవర్ధిని,
ఎక్కడ చూసినా పుట్టలే,
ఎవ్రీవేర్ ది యాంట్ హిల్స్,
కానీ ఆ విధమైనటువంటి తత్వం లోపలే ఈ రామాయణం కూడాను అదే విధంగానే వచ్చింది.
రామాయణం ఆల్సో స్పీక్స్
వాల్మీకి,
వాల్మీకి
ఎక్కడి వాడు, పుట్టలో పుట్టినటువంటి వాడే,
వాల్మీకి ఇస్ బోర్న్ అవుట్ ఆఫ్ దిస్ యాంట్ హిల్ పుట్ట,
అతని పైన పుట్టంతా పెరిగింది,
అండ్ యాంట్ హిల్ హస్ గ్రోన్ ఫర్ ద,
ఆ పుట్టల పైన కూడా పాములంతా సంచరించాయి,
అండ్ ది స్నేక్స్ వర్ దేర్,
ఆ పుట్టల నుంచి పుట్టినటువంటిదే ఈ రామాయణము,
అండ్ దిస్ రామాయణ కేమ్ అవుట్ ఆఫ్ ద అండ్
కనుకనే మన హృదయం అనేటువంటి పుట్ట లోపల,
అండ్ ద హార్ట్ విచ్ ఇస్ పుట్ట అండ్ హెల్
దుర్గుణములు దురాచారములు అనేటువంటి పాములంతా ఉన్నాయి,
దేర్ ఆర్ ప్రెసెంట్ ద స్నేక్స్ విచ్ ఆర్ వికెడ్ ఫీలింగ్స్ బ్యాడ్ థాట్స్,
దీనికి భగవత్ నామాన్ని అనేటువంటి ఒక స్మరణ చేయండి,
బై జస్ట్ థింక్ ఆఫ్ గాడ్స్ నేమ్ టైమ్ అండ్ అగైన్
అన్ని బయటపడిపోతాయి,
ఎవ్రీథింగ్ విల్ కమ్ అవుట్,
అది ఏ నాదస్వరము,
అండ్ దట్ ఈస్ ద మెలడీ,
అది ఏ నాగస్వరము,
అండ్ దట్ ఈస్ ద మ్యూజిక్,
అది ఏ శివన స్వరము,
అండ్ దట్ ఈస్ ద సెలెస్టియల్ సాంగ్,
ఈ స్వరాన్ని మనం ఒక్కతోరి పంపితే అంత పుట్టలోని పాములంతా వస్తాయి,
విత్ దిస్ మ్యూజిక్ అండ్ మెలడీ ఆల్ స్నేక్స్ విల్ కమ్ అవుట్,
కనుక మానవత్వంలో ఉన్నటువంటి దుర్గుణాలు పోవాలనుకుంటే దివ్యమైనటువంటి నామస్మరణ చేయాలి,
ఇన్ ఆర్డర్ టు గివ్ అప్ ఆల్ బ్యాడ్ హ్యాబిట్స్ అండ్ బ్యాడ్ థింగ్స్,
ఈనాడు నామం అంటే చాలా మంది ఒక విధమైన హాస్యాస్పదంగా చూస్తున్నారు,
ద హ్యూమన్ లైఫ్ హాస్ బికమ్ ఎ కైండ్ ఆఫ్ మాకరీ,
పొరపాటు పొరపాటు పొరపాటు,
ఇట్స్ ఎ మిస్టేక్ ఇన్
హరే నామ హరే నామ హరే నామైవ కేవలం కలవు నాస్తియవ నాస్తియవ గతనిందా, ఈ నామస్మరణ చాలా పవిత్రమైనటువంటిది,
సింగింగ్ ద గ్లోరీ ఆఫ్ గాడ్ ఇస్ హైలీ సీక్రెట్.
So that is a beautiful explanation. In fact, because Swami went so fast, the translator didn't get enough time to translate the poem. Here's the translation. Swami says, that is the place encircled by the sacred river Chitravati, which meanders its way in its pristine beauty. That is the place around which there are beautiful mango groves, symbolizing auspiciousness. Standing on guard on four sides are the deities Parvati and Parameshwara, protecting the place. Nearby is the town of Bukkapatnam, which speaks of the glory of Bukkaraya. There stands Puttapuram or Puttaparthi in its divine majesty, spreading its grandeur and glory all over the world. And of course, immediately after the poem, Swami says, Puttaparthi stands for the effulgence that is present when a person is born. You know, in our tradition, till the baby attains 1 year of age, you know, we have this practice, right, where the youngsters fall at the feet of the elders seeking blessings, but we see that till the child becomes 1 year of age, the child is not allowed to touch anybody's feet. In fact, even the most elderly people, even if they're in their 80s or 90s, they come and touch the feet of the baby, because it is said that when the baby is born, it has not yet been polluted by this body consciousness. you know, you will often see babies who are months old studying intently their own hands and legs. And it is we adults, in quotes, the so-called wise ones, who go and tell them, "Ayo, you're looking at yourself. What, you're looking at yourself only? What are you doing this? That is you." You know, we actually build in body consciousness in the baby. Of course, certain amount of body consciousness is required to carry out the tasks in the world. But I think it's we adults who steep the baby into body consciousness and completely downgrade it from its level of divinity. And that is what Swami says, that Puttaparthi actually stands for that innocence, that divinity, that radiance that is present when you are born. And I think in that itself, Swami makes it very clear what is the goal of Puttaparthi also, to take us back to that radiance. And in order to do that, Swami says that just like music, you know, brings snakes out, we see snake charmers using music to bring it out. Swami says in the same way, it is chanting of the divine name that will bring out all the snakes, the bad habits from the body, which is like the anthill. You know, I was reading somewhere else this comparison of the human body as the anthill and the snake within. You know, this when they speak of Kundalini Yoga, they speak of it as a coiled snake sitting at the base. And in that comparison, they call the human body as the anthill in which the coiled serpent is rising, lies coiled within, and it should rise up to attain glory. And once that happens, once the snake is, you know, out, the anthill serves no purpose. So also it is said that the purpose of human body is to realize something much higher, something much grander. The reality, what is one's true identity. And for that sake, you know, I think it is very, very symbolic that this place is called Puttaparthi. In fact, Swami alludes to it also by quoting the example of Valmiki. Valmiki was actually a robber who led a very sinful life. And when he felt the folly of what he was doing, he took up Namasmarana and he sat deep in contemplation of the Ramanama. And as he sat in contemplation, an anthill developed around him. And when he actually emerged out of the anthill, he had become Valmiki. He was no longer Ratnakara, the highway robber, but he was Valmiki, the sage and saint. So even there, the anthill forms the transition between the state of ignorance and the state of complete awareness. So that makes it very clear why the body has been given to us. The body has been given to us to transit from a state of ignorance to a state of complete awareness. And that is the purpose of the Suprabhatam as well. So it is not surprising that this Puttapuram or Puttaparthi has been referred to in the second stanza itself of the Suprabhatam.
And looking at it from as a continuation of the first one, as we had said, you know, where it says Uttishta Satya Saisha Kartavyam Deva Manvikam, we had spoken of as I am waking up, my day begins, and with the beginning of my day, my duties begin. And the whole idea is to awaken that divine consciousness within, or that Swami within the heart, to carry on the tasks that we are supposed to do. And if you look at it from that point of view, it says Uttishta Partisha, and Swami so beautifully said the word Parti means illumination. And you are awakening the Lord of illumination from within, saying that let every act that I do be guided by the illumination that you are. And it says Uttishta Jagadipate, and Swami would say Jagat means that which comes and goes, and Jagadipate is one who is constant, who's, you know, a very beautiful analogy which Swami would often give whenever it, be it in Kodaikanal or in Vrindavan, when Swami would give photographs to the entire class, where Swami would give individual photographs and there would be a queue and boys would come, take a picture with Swami and then move away and the other boy would come. And Swami would never lose that opportunity to remind everybody there, see, this is the reality, that people come and go, but I remain. I am always there. You know, Lord Krishna gave it as a Vishwarupa Darshan to Arjuna, but that was precisely what was being played out there. Swami said, I am always here. So when Swami would say, the Jagati Pate means the Lord who doesn't come, who doesn't go, who is always there. So which means that today I am in this body. You know, this body was born, this body is going to die. But the Lord within is the constant inhabitant of whatever body is taken. So you are awakening that Lord to be the doer of your actions. And it says, Uttishta Karuna Purna. And Swami would say that as long as every action of yours is guided by compassion, the probability of you doing something wrong or harmful is very, very less. Because Swami would say that there's always misguided compassion also, but it is always better to err on the side of compassion than on the side of selfishness, right? So Swami would say that always be guided by compassion. So he says, Uttishta Jagati Pati, Uttishta Karuna Purna, because if you are guiding me, all my actions will be suffused with karuna and compassion. Loka Mangala Siddhaye. Swami would often say that whatever I do, you know, it could be a few hundred crore project, or it could be something simple as me coming and speaking to one small primary school kid, or, you know, an obscure devotee in the audience, right? May not be a very rich person, may not be a person of authority. Swami would say, whatever I do it only for Loka Kalyanam. Every act that Swami performs is, you know, targeted at welfare for the whole world. So when we wake up the Swami within, it is that attitude that Swami, whatever I do, it should be for the betterment of the world, not for my own betterment, not for my selfish needs, but so that in some form the people around me will benefit.
When you were saying about Jagat coming and going, I think in the Sai Blossom product called Darshan Part 5, in that there is a Sairam.
I think we're just having a technical snag, dear listeners. We'll just get back to you in a short while.
Yes, so Prem, when you were saying about Jagat, you know, that which comes and goes, I was reminded of the Sai Blossom product, I think it's Darshan Part 5. In that, at Gokulam, Swami is actually granting photos to all the students, and there, this is exactly what's happening. There's a line of students who are coming, posing with Swami and walking away, and Swami is saying, hey boys, look here, you are all coming and going, I am always here, you are the ones who come and go, I am always there, I never leave you. So beautiful, so poignant, and in the video when we see, everyone laughs it off, but I'm sure each and every one of those students and each and every one of us who has seen that moment, even on video, will be keeping it in our mind and trying to imbibe the beautiful lesson it carries. You know, another way of breaking the word partisha, parti is often referred, the body is often referred to as parti, and of course, the body-mind complex is referred to as Parti. And Partisha, Partisha stands for one who is the lord of the body and the mind. And who is the lord of the body and mind? That is the Atma. So once again, we see that this Suprabhatam has got such a deep meaning. It's all about awakening to our true identity. In fact, I remember how Swami would play with the word Puttaparthi. He would say Puttaparthi stands for put apart the I. Put apart the I meaning let go of the false sense of identification, the small I. And that is what this is all about identifying not with the body and mind, giving up Dehabhimanam and inculcating Atmabhimanam. So it is not just a normal waking up, as we said, but an awakening to the truth. And you know, you said Jagatipate, you gave that beautiful interpretation which Bhagwan has given about Jagat. If we go by a little more literal translation of the word Jagatipate, it means Lord of the entire world. And I feel this holds especially true for Swami, because though there have been Purnavatars before, though there have been descents of the Lord before onto the earth, I think it's only in the case of Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba that during the physical sojourn, millions of people from across the globe recognized the avatar and got the opportunity to offer obeisance and seek grace and blessings. Like even during the Krishna avatar, that is the closest Purna avatar of global reach that we know, even Krishna avatar times, only a few knew Krishna as the supreme lord of the universe, had the number of people who know Bhagwan known Krishna in those days, I don't think the Mahabharata war would have happened. It wouldn't have happened. And this is in spite of Lord Krishna granting the Vishwarupa Darshan even in the Hastinapur Kaurava court. So in that sense, definitely this is Jagatipate, because Swami's glory spread around the world even during the physical sojourn. And then Lokamangala Siddhaye, just the other day, you know, while seeing the footage of aarti being done to Swami, I think this was the year 2001 or 2002, I saw how, you know, when Swami's, on those rare occasions when he stood and received the entire aarti, otherwise usually after the first two stanzas, Swami walks away or Swami goes and begins to interact with the devotees. So when Swami stood and received the whole aarti, in the end came the Samasta Loka Sukhino Bhavantu, and Swami too joined in that. And interestingly, he would join in only to the last couple of words. So everybody says Samasta Loka, or in those days it was Loka Samasta. And when it comes to Sukhino Bhavantu, Swami also chants Sukhino Bhavantu and raises both his hands in blessings. And even in the last few years, when Swami was confined most of the time to the wheelchair sofa, where Swami would sit more or less for the entire aarti in the Sai Kulwant Hall publicly, we can see this. It is available in the footage where Swami repeats this word, Sukhino Bhavantu, Sukhino Bhavantu. It's almost as if Swami is granting that blessing. You know, we are saying Samasta Loka Sukhino Bhavantu. It's a prayer that we are offering. And Swami is repeating only the Sukhino Bhavantu. It's as if like he's saying amen to our prayers. It is something that is amazing. We see throughout. We have seen whether Swami does the Yajna, it is done for Vishwashanti. When he does, as you said, the smallest of the small things to the largest of large things, it is always done for Loka Kalyanam. And Swami has always emphasized this. I think the only way we move towards realizing our oneness with the Atma is becoming very expansive. To become such expansive, we need to be absolutely selfless. And I think one of the exercises to cultivate that selflessness is to pray for the welfare of one and all. Whether he is related to me, not related to me, my friend or my foe, whether I love, whether I like someone or I have a dislike for someone, all that is kept aside, and at least for a few seconds in a day, when I say Samasta Loka Sukhino Bhavantu, wholeheartedly I pray for the goodness and welfare of everyone in the universe. And I think that is the reason why Swami made this a practice, so that we inculcate that selflessness, grow in that selflessness, so one day we realize that we are all one, and that is what is actual putting apart the I and realizing the true I.
And that is the second paragraph of the Suprabhatam. I think we'll just take a short break, dear listeners. Don't go away, because we'll probably cover a few more paragraphs before we conclude this week's episode.
Shri Raghavam Dasharatatmajama Prameyam Sita Patim Raghukulanmaya Ratnadeepam Ajanubhavum Aravindadalayataksham Ramam Nishachara Vinashakaram Namami namami. ಶ್ರೀರಘುನಂದನ ದಶರಥ ನಂದನ ಶ್ರೀರಘುನಂದನ ದಶರಥ ನಂದನ ಭದ್ರಾದೀಶ್ವರ ನಂದನ ಭದ್ರಾದೀಶ್ವರ ರಾಮ.
ವೆಲ್ಕಮ್ ಡಿಯರ್ ಲಿಸ್ನರ್ಸ್, ಅಂಡ್ ವಿ ಜಸ್ಟ್ ಫಿನಿಶ್ ದ ಸೆಕೆಂಡ್ ಪ್ಯಾರಾಗ್ರಾಫ್ ಆಫ್ ದಿ ಸತ್ಯಸಾಯಿ ಸುಪ್ರಭಾತಂ. ಪ್ರಾಬಬ್ಲಿ ವಿಲ್ ಗೋ ಟು ದಿ ಥರ್ಡ್ ಪ್ಯಾರಾಗ್ರಾಫ್. We had a mention of Puttaparthi in the second one. The third one also has some beautiful references to Puttaparthi and some features of Puttaparthi very, very beautifully included into the Satyasai Suprabhatam. We'll play the third paragraph for you. We'll give you a brief meaning after that and then we'll discuss about it.
Chitravati Tata Vishala ಸುಶಾಂತ ಸೌಧೇ ನಿಷ್ಠಂತಿ ಸೇವಕ ಜನಾಸ್ತವ ದರ್ಶನಾರ್ಥಂ ಆದಿತ್ಯಕಾಂತಿರನುಭಾತಿ ಸಮಸ್ತ ಲೋಕಾನ್ ಶ್ರೀ ಸತ್ಯಸಾಯಿ ಭಗವನ್
The meaning goes that in the vast mansion full of bliss and tranquility on the banks of the river Chitravati, those anxious to serve thee are waiting for thy darshan. The radiance of the sun is illuminating the world. O Lord Satisai, blessed by thy wakefulness, we pray for an auspicious day.
As we said before, the Suprabhatam has multiple levels of meanings, and even from a purely physical meaning, it is so beautiful, and it actually describes the scenario that would happen early in the morning. By 4 a.m. itself, whole town of Puttaparthi would be awake and everyone would be scurrying towards the mandir. And I think it is one of those few towns where people would rise so early in the morning. Of course, with modernization, things are changing outside Prashant Nilayam. But in those days, the entire town of Puttaparthi would be waking up and rushing towards Darshan. And all these people would be eagerly waiting for Darshan. Interestingly, you know, the word used in the Suprabhatam is those that are desirous of serving you. All these different worships that are conducted in temples in a traditional manner are all called seva. You know, they're all called as sevas. Whether you do a Pumala seva, which is offering garlands of flowers, or whether you offer the Panchamrita seva, all these are called sevas. Any kind of offering done to the Lord is considered as seva. And it is, of course, Bhagwan who has given a new dimension to that word, saying that seva doesn't mean just offering flowers and offering fruits and water to the Lord. Offer instead the Dehapatram, or the leaf of your body, the Manofalam, the fruit of your mind, the Hridaya Pushpam, the flower of your heart, and Ananda Bhashpam, that is water, which is nothing but tears of joy. You know, bring joy to others. Grama Seva is Rama Seva. You know, Nara Seva is Narayan Seva. Jana Seva is Janardana Seva. That is Swami who has brought in the new meaning. But this stanza gives, actually, even if you see physically, it gives a beautiful description of how the day would begin in Puttaparthi. Everyone would rush and they would be sitting in absolute silence and await the beautiful form in orange to come out for Darshan. So it begins with Chitravati, because I think in the earlier days, even in the Pathamandiram days, and for a few years after that, there was no proper bathrooms or such facilities in Puttaparthi, and people would have their ablutions in the river Chitravati. Even my father says that when he came, that is in the 1960s, even in the 1960s, they would be actually going to Chitravati river for their ablutions. And only when it was very cold in the winter, he said that, you know, there would be a few people who would, for 5 paise, 5 paise is, I don't think that it's of any value today. The minimum thing is 5 rupees, which is 500 paise. But 5 paise those days had value, and for 5 paise you would get a bucket of hot water, which you could take. Means this water would be heated on on firewood flame. Mm-hmm. And that was available. So even in 1960s that was a condition. So it is natural that Tirumalachar has described it like this, that, and it begins with Chitravati because the day would literally begin on the banks of Chitravati. And I think that is also very, very symbolic, because when we look at all the great civilizations in the world, they have all begun on the banks of the river. Even today, when we look at any of the major cities in the world, be it, in India, we have Hyderabad, we have Delhi, we have Bombay, we have Bangalore, we have Calcutta. All these are on banks of the river. Of course, the rivers have been polluted and wiped out, that today we don't see any river flowing in these cities. But London, any of the major cities in the world you take, mostly they are built on the banks of rivers. Of course, there are some cities that may not be built like this, but when it comes to a religious or spiritual city, it is always on the bank of a river. Whether it is Jerusalem, whether it is Varanasi, whether any place of religious or spiritual significance is always on the bank of a river, because the river stands for the flow of life. It also has a deep spiritual meaning. You know, I would like to just say that, which was explained by Bhagwan to one of our college professors, Professor H.J. Bhagya.
Mm-hmm.
Swami told him that the river must flow between two banks till it reaches its goal, which is this ocean. This is how your life also must be. And Swami said, in fact, Swami played on his name. Swami said, your name is Bhagya. And Swami said, Bha stands for Bhakti. Gya stands for Jnana. These are the two banks of the river between which your karma must flow. You must do your karma always bounded by Bhakti on one side and Jnana on the other side. It should not overflow, Swami said. If it breaks the banks and overflows, it will lead to flood and it will cause havoc. The river of life, the karma, you know, the karma Kurukshetra it is called. Life is called Kurukshetra because it is the field of intense activity. So all activity is called karma, and Swami said that the flow of karma must be between the banks of Bhakti and Jnana. Then the river will safely merge at its ultimate destination, which is the ocean. So a river has meaning physically because it is the birthplace of civilization, it is the birthplace of life. It also has a deep spiritual meaning because it gives us a direction on where life must head.
If you, when you're talking about the olden days when the old mandir itself used to be on the banks of Chitravati, or at least much closer to Chitravati than it is right now.
Absolutely.
You know, most of the devotees would recollect Prashanti Nilayam as Swami standing on the banks of River Chitravati. Because most often, you know, when we go through all those stories of those devotees coming in the early years, those were days when, you know, you can't call anybody and tell them that you're coming. You cannot book online. You cannot inform anybody with it. Even with a telegram, we spoke of how the closest post office was in Bukapattam, and, you know, every once in 2 days, letters would be dispatched to Puttaparthi, and somebody had to go and collect all the letters, even the newspapers. Even during those days when the devotees would come, Swami would, whatever time it would be, Swami would be waiting on the banks of Chitravati, waiting for them. And that's why for them, an imagination of Prashanti Nilayam or of Swami was on the banks of Chitravati. And very beautifully worded, no? Chitravati tata vishala sushanta saude. Sushanta means to have that peace, right? When you're sitting on the banks of Chitravati, you find that peace. And sushanta saude also can be, Vishala Sushanta Saude. It means, Vishala means broad. And Swami would say, you know, here there is no restriction. It is not that only poor people can come, only rich people can come, only people of this religion, of this background can come. It is open to everybody, right? And that is the significance, I feel, of the word Vishala Sushanta Saude. The word Sauda usually is used as a rest house, right? You know, when you're traveling, Swami would say that the journey is from one point to the other, but there are some houses which are built on the way where you pause to enthuse yourself and energize yourself for the journey, right? So Swami would say the feet of the Lord, or when you contemplate on the Lord, it is like that, to give you more energy in that journey. And Swami would say that this is a place, this is open to everybody. And we've seen that. Swami would say even to the Prime Minister of India, Swami would say that think of this as your mother's house. And Swami would say this to all the devotees who would come. There's a beautiful interaction with, Mr. Raman Rao, who used to be with Swami. He used to say that, you know, there were few office bearers that invariably when they would come for a Dashara festival or for a birthday festival, Swami would call all of them, give an interview before they leave. So they would feel very happy. And, you know, somewhere he said that maybe that feeling of we were privileged had crept in. And during one of the birthday sessions, Swami chose to, you know, completely break it. So Swami had apparently mentioned in a discourse when the birthday celebrations were concluding. Swami said, see, you might be seeing that at the end of the birthday celebrations, I call a few people for interviews and, you know, give them a very coveted send-off. Swami said, see, in your house, if you've given your daughter away for marriage, and if she comes home for a brief visit from her in-law's house, you will not send off the daughter from your house. You will go to her house and drop her income. So Swami said that all you devotees who come to me are like you coming to your mother's house. So Swami said, I don't give you a send-off at Parthi. I'll give you a send-off by coming to you, to your houses, dropping you and coming back. And Swami said, some VIPs have to be given a send-off here. So you were saying that in one shot, Swami kind of broke that idea. I mean, you want to be more, you know, dear and belong to Swami than even that privilege of having an interview. Mm. And Swami would say, so in that sense, Swami would say that this is your mother's house. It is open to everybody. And that is why it is Vishala Sushanta Saude. This is open to everybody. And this is a place where you find your mind being calmed. And, you know, there is that very beautiful song, I think, which we have even made a visual out of, Chitravati.
Chitravati Tira Chidrupa Bhava.
Chidrupa Bhava. Chidrupa Bhava. Bhava. In that it says that, you know, when we think of Puttaparthi, when we think of Swami, we can imagine that Swami standing on the banks of Chitravati with that welcoming smile, right? And this is a reference to that, I would feel, because, you know, Tirumalachar must have come in those days when he would have been a witness of these sights, right?
Absolutely.
And then, of course, the second line is Tishtanti Sevaka Jana. The other way of looking at it is, Swami himself would say that, you know, when you say Jagati Pate means reference to the Atma, Swami would say, when you believe that the master is the soul, then the Karmendriyas and Jnanendriyas become the servitors. And Swami would say that this is the order of hierarchy which has to be maintained. The master is the Atma, and then comes, you know, the intellect, followed by the mind, followed by the senses, right? And followed by the Karmendriyas or the, you know, the limbs of action. So this is the order of hierarchy, which a bureaucracy which has to be maintained. So when you say that the servitors are waiting for you, it is again like telling Swami, wake up, I need to do my task. And what do I do my task with? I have to do it with my Karmendriyas, guided by the Jnanendriyas. So these servitors are waiting for your command. When your command is given, then they will act. And that is how I want to carry out my actions.
Another possible way of understanding Tishtanti Sevaka Janaha Stava Darshanartham is, people yearning to serve are waiting for your darshan. That is the literal meaning. So it can be understood as, those with a yearning to serve alone are those worthy of darshan. In the sense that, I remember we read in one of the discourses where it was said that seva is the bhakti for the Virata Rupa of the Lord. You know, seva is not like a karma or an action. Seva is also devotion only. It's also bhakti, but bhakti towards the Vishwa Virata Rupa of the Lord. And what is the Vishwa Virata Rupa of the Lord? The Vishwa Virata Rupa, as Swami would say, Sahasra Shirsha Purusha Sahasraksha Sahasrapat. Meaning, it is the form which has thousands of head, thousands of eyes, thousands of hands and thousands of legs, which is nothing but every hand you see, every leg you see, every eye you see, every face you see, that is God. So when we are able to see God in all the beings, we are having the Virata Rupa Darshan. And in order to have that darshan, I think we need that jnana. You need that jnana to realize the divinity immanent in one and all. And in another discourse, Swami has beautifully linked these three and said that is how all the three are linked. You need wisdom to recognize the Virata Rupa of the Lord, and then you do your work as worship. Because when you are doing seva, seva is nothing but bhakti towards the Virata Rupa. To recognize which you need is the jnana. And Swami said, this is how work, worship and wisdom, the three W's are linked to each other. One without the other is meaningless. You need wisdom to recognize the divinity immanent and all. And then you need to work for that divinity immanent and all, which becomes worship. So, this, if there is a disconnect in this, then we are not worthy of darshan. And Swami says, when we are able to, it is also a message that when we are able to serve in this manner selflessly, you will get your darshan. You will get your darshan. And we have seen, we have heard experience of people how in different forms and in different ways they could experience Bhagwan in their life. They could see Bhagwan. Of course, Swami has directly encouraged it physically. There is a story of this Sevadal volunteer who dived into a clogged septic drain. You know, the sanitary drains which had got blocked, he dived in and he cleaned it and he came out. And while giving Padnamaskar to these Sevadal, Swami materialized a ring for this volunteer and told that he will have no more birth. You know, that Swami has definitely done physically. But even these days, you know, recently we did a documentary on Sevadal. And in that all the Sevadal who have been interviewed are all those who have come to Bhagwan, who are doing Seva in the physical absence of Bhagwan. And one of the Sevadal volunteers in Hindi, he says how when they went to the hospital to do service, one old lady who is definitely from the lower economic strata in society, who is very, very poor, downtrodden, she came and she was beaming and so joyous and so happy. And they knew that her young baby, her small baby is about to undergo an operation. It's a complicated cardiac procedure. And so they were pleasantly surprised to see her exuding so much radiance and joy. They asked her whether the operation was complete and it was all successful. She said, no, the operation is not yet complete. But Swami has told me that the child is going to be all right. And so they were very amazed and they asked her to share her experience. They said, how did Swami come in your dream? Did you have a vision? She said, no. And pointing to the scarves of the Sevadal volunteer, Swami said, like you only, somebody wearing this. In this form, Swami came and told me, don't worry, your child will be fine. I am sure that my child will be fine. They were actually moved when they realized that she was seeing Swami in them. And that person has narrated it. Of course, the documentary is present on our YouTube channel, Radio Sai YouTube channel, the Seva documentary. You can see it to get realize what impact it had on them. So in these different ways, anybody who is inculcating even an iota of selflessness and doing work to please the Lord definitely makes it a point to show them that He is pleased, and they are able to experience the Lord by their hearts getting touched.
And if I could just add to one more statement which was mentioned in that paragraph, it says, Aditya Kantir.
That is the third one. Aditya Kantir Anubhati Samasta Lokan.
If you look at that, Swami would often say, he would say that God's grace is like the sun's rays. It has no limitations. It kind of covers everywhere. It does not see that this person is a devotee and grace should come here. But mm-hmm. Swami would say that it is up to each one to recognize that the Lord is, whatever I'm able to do, whatever I'm able to achieve, it is because of the Lord's grace. I think that statement probably is a reminder of that. It is like, Swami, I am here to serve you. I am here to do your bidding. Even if I do not recognize, whatever I'm doing is out of your grace only. Without the Lord's grace, nothing can be done. But if I am able to recognize it, I will benefit out of it. So this is again a prayer for that remembrance, for that wakefulness into that understanding that it is through the grace of the Lord that every action is being done.
I think, Prem, we have got just time to cover one more stanza maybe.
Yeah, I think we'll go to that, probably the fourth stanza of the Suprabhatam.
Yes.
Tvannama kirtana ratastra vadivya nama Gayanti bhakti rasapana pradishta chitta Datum kripa sahita darshana mashuhebhyah Shri Satya Sai Bhagavan Tava Suprabhatam.
The meaning of that verse goes, devotees engrossed in singing thy glory are happy and blissful when they taste the nectar of devotion. Kindly shower thy grace by granting them thy darshan. O Lord Satya Sai, blessed by thy wakefulness, we pray for an auspicious day.
Once again, if we travel back to those times when we would wait for Swami singing bhajans, it exactly captures the mood and the environment that we would be in. Lot of anticipation as we sing bhajans, we are seeing the tempo, the crescendo, the fervor increasing. We would pray, and especially during the final few years, this happened even more because those times it was even uncertain whether Swami would come for darshan or not. We were literally given a crash course in loving His uncertainty. So I remember especially bhajans like Aavo Pyare, all these Aao Bhajans, Aao Man Mandir Mein, all these would be sung with so much fervor, waiting for Swami to come and grant darshan. But again, as I said, this meaning can be taken in multiple ways, and one way is to understand that true devotees are those who are lost in the bliss of drinking in the divine name. If you are a devotee, one way of recognizing that is you must get transported into ethereal joy and bliss when the divine name is chanted or when the divine name is heard. I remember, you know, one of the students had actually asked a revered senior as to how is it that people like Mirabai derived so much joy in chanting the divine name, but when I chant the divine name, I don't get that joy.
Mm-hmm.
And that elder gave a very interesting reply. He said that, see, when we are suffering from malaria or jaundice, even if we eat something sweet, it tastes bitter. Is the mistake in the sweet? No. The mistake is in the tongue. The tongue is diseased. The tongue is sick. That's why it's not able to taste it. So he said, that is the case. That is the case. We are all having bhavaroga. Because of bhavaroga, we are not able to enjoy the sweetness of the name. When we transform bhavaroga into bhava and raga, automatically you'll be able to enjoy that sweetness. And so automatically the next question was, what then is the medicine for that? What then is the medicine we should take? Because a person with jaundice or malaria will take medicine, get cured, and then be able to enjoy the sweets. The beautiful thing is, the Lord's name is the medicine. The Lord's name is also the sweet. That is why possibly, you know, when we start off our sadhana and think, let's do namasmarana, we may not particularly relish or enjoy doing namasmarana. Maybe that is the phase when the nama is acting like the medicine. But we must continue and complete the whole course. Once we complete the whole course, once we are cured of this bhavaroga or this disease of worldly attachment, we will start deriving and enjoying the sweetness in the Lord's name, and it will happen automatically. And I think that is when we are closer to calling ourselves devotees than we are now. And therefore, you know, this stanza is about chanting Tvannama Kirtana, doing Kirtana of your name. Those who are caught in the mire of worldly desires will find it hard to enjoy the Lord's name, but then for such people, it is better that we start taking the Lord's name as the medicine, and in due course of time, we will also be able to enjoy. It's so beautiful. Tvannama Kirtana Rathas, Tvannama Kirtana Rathastava Divya Nama Gayanti Bhakti Rasapana. Rasapana, they're drinking into their heart's content this sweet rasa. Prarishta Chitta. Prarishta Chitta means Chitta is the mind. Prarishta is, you know, exuberant joy. Drinking in this sweet, ambrosial, divine name, the minds of the devotees is bursting with joy. So that is one description. And as I said, the other meaning is, this is a way to recognize if you are a true devotee or not. Because if you are a true devotee, then listening to the name of the Lord, your mind will burst with joy.
Absolutely. And this is very, very beautiful. Even when you were saying about the medicine, the medicinal aspect of the name, Swami would even give the example of a child who has to be got used to eating solid food.
Mm.
Swami would say that after being fed with milk for so many months, the child refuses. In fact, it is a ceremony in Indian tradition where they say that annaprashna, and Swami would himself do that for so many children. So many have been fortunate to have that done by Swami himself. And Swami would say that, you know, first when you give solid food to the child refuses it.
Mm.
Sometimes the child might be amused by it, but then it wants to go back to milk, right? Because you put something new in the mouth, there might be some interest, because I think that again is an experience we all have. When we first come for darshan, come for bhajans, we are all excited. Oh, it's very nice. But then slowly we don't have that same enthusiasm all the time. That's because Swami would say that the child is not used to it, but if you persist in giving the child that rice or that solid food, there comes a stage when the child cannot, you know, live without that solid food. I mean, case in point is all of us. Because after some point, you cannot go back to living in a liquid diet. even if you want to do that for any purpose. So Swami would say, same is the case. With the period of time, you know, you will get that taste for the Lord's name. And this is a suggestion by saying that those who have found that taste, are praying for you. We know that we need you. We know that we need your presence in our life. The other word, you know, prahishta chitta, it is very similar to the usage of the word mudita. Prema mudita manase kaho, Swami says. It also means with the joy exuberating heart. You know, the heart which is filled with joy because of there is the presence of love, you take the name of the Lord, right? The other very beautiful meaning of the word prahishta also means straightening, it seems. So prahishta chitta also means the mind which has been straightened and which has been made, set right.
It's no longer wavered or chanchala.
Yeah, through the namasmarana, through the singing of the Lord's name, with such a mind we are praying to you to wake up and lead us. That's the other meaning of that.
And then the third line goes, Datum Krupa Sahita Darshanam Ashutebhyaha. So, come and shower your Krupa and Darshanam on all these people who are gathering thus. Once again, it just means that once you have this, the Lord has no other option but to come and shower His compassion and blessing and Darshan on you. And there are any number of stories in our Puranas, in our scriptures. We know the story of Gajendra. When once with that kind of purity and intensity anybody takes up the name of the Lord definitely comes rushing. In this context, I am reminded of the experience of Mrs. Parvati Mahadevan. You know, blessed be her soul, a few years back she passed away. But she was one of the foremost members of the Vrindavan Ladies Bhajan group.
Okay.
And she has, in fact, composed many, many bhajans, many popular bhajans. And she was very, very devoted to Swami. She was very sincere in singing bhajans, and whatever Swami would say would be like a Veda Vakya for her. In fact, Swami had materialized a Shivalinga for her and told her to sincerely worship it every morning. And she would be so sincere that at times she would get late for morning darshan and bhajan because she was engaged in worship of Shivalinga. And Swami would joke many times saying that simply I made a mistake by giving her that lingam. She's not coming to see me only now, you know. But she would insist that, Swami, you gave and you said it, so I have to do. So Swami would appreciate that. In fact, I think twice or thrice a day she would carry out this worship of the Shivalinga. One evening when she was worshipping this Shivalinga, there was a thunderstorm going on because of which power had been cut. It's a very common phenomenon in India and in Bangalore. You know, a lot of people enjoy candlelit dinners. Not because it's a special occasion, but courtesy of the electricity board. So the power was cut and it didn't deter her. She lit the lamp and continued to do her worship of the linga. What had happened was one robber had got into the house and he was quickly taking some things to run away. He found nothing valuable. But in the light of that lamp, he saw the golden Mangal Sutra of Parvati aunty gleaming there. And he rushed and, you know, he thought he'll quickly snatch it from her neck and run out of the door. Because it was very close by to the main door. Even as he held on to that Mangal Sutra, you know, Parvati aunty saw this thief and she was enraged. The interesting thing is she was not enraged on the robber. She was enraged on Swami. She was enraged that, Swami, I am sitting here and worshipping you. And how is it that this disturbance is happening? And her rage and her righteous indignation came forth as a bhajan. Just imagine, this is a thing. This is the difference between saying a prayer and actually praying. You know, saying a prayer is you repeating some words or something like that. Praying is when you're connected with God, when you're absolutely in touch with God. So spontaneously came this bhajan. And apparently, you know, hearing this bhajan, that thief began to shiver. God knows what he saw. You know, I won't be surprised if he saw Swami himself, because that is the power of a devotee's call. when a devotee calls the Lord spontaneously and instantaneously manifests. That is what we even saw Swami telling Hislop during the conversations, that you may be anywhere in the world, all you need to do is just call me, I'll be there. Only thing that call is what kind of a call. That is what we need to do. And that thief left and ran away. Thus, because of this, we have actually been gifted with a beautiful bhajan. That bhajan, goes as a call to Lord Shiva, saying, you are an ocean of compassion. Please come and destroy this Kalimala. Kalimala is the dirt of the Kali age. All the six Arshad Vargas, that jealousy, anger, envy, greed, all these are considered as the dirt that has come in the Kali Yuga. So that is, they are combinedly referred to as Kalimala. So she prays, come and destroy this Kalimala, because that is what is possibly leading him to come and rob my house. But her house was saved from being robbed. She had this beautiful experience, and we have been gifted with this beautiful bhajan. Before we make our concluding statements on this, I think we'll quickly listen to that bhajan.
Shambho, Shiva Shambho.
That was the bhajan that Arvind was talking about, so beautifully composed by Mrs. Parvati
Mahadevan.
And that beautiful story, I think we've narrated that before, we've heard it narrated by other singers before, but very, very beautiful. The way the devotee connects to the Lord, and Swami would often say that, you know, if you look at the Lord and say, "Hey, Chitta Chora," then it is like hurling an abuse on the Lord. But the same thing, when you sing it as a song, the way the Lord responds will be completely different. And that is the essence which is captured in this Dvannama Kirtana. It is not merely taking the Lord's name, but we are here to sing the Lord's name. And usually singing is always associated with an emotion, right? Speaking is a form of expression, but singing is always an emotional form of expression. So be it pain, like in the case of the singer that you mentioned, or even out of love, we always tend to sing. And when you say that singing the Lord's name, it means a even more emotional form of expression and calling out to the Lord. And that is what is referred to in the fourth paragraph in the Suprabhatam.
The power of the name, I don't think we need to emphasize on. Many, many times Swami has said that the name is possibly the only replacement for the form. Swami would narrate the story of the Tulabharam. When there is, in brief, you know, Satyabhama wants to own Krishna all to herself. She's jealous of the intimacy he shares with Rukmini, and therefore she comes up with a stratagem where she offers Krishna to Narada and then says that I will buy back Krishna, and now when I buy back Krishna, Krishna belongs only to me. And in order to buy Krishna, Krishna is made to sit on one side, one scale of the weighing scale, and on the other side it is said that Satyabhama starts putting gold because she wants to pay Narada weight equivalent to the weight of Lord Krishna in gold. But how much ever gold she piles on, the pan is never disturbed, and the pan on which Lord Krishna is sitting is always down. The whole kingdom gold is exhausted, and Satyabhama is now worried, thinking that she has lost Krishna forever, not only for herself but to all the other wives of Krishna as well. So she runs to Rukmini and says, "Oh sister, I have done this terrible thing. I don't know what to do now. We have lost Krishna." Rukmini, unable to bear this, comes rushing down there, and she has nothing in her hand. And she says, "Wait, I also want to make an offering." And Swami says that she picks up a tulsi leaf, a leaf of the holy basil, and charges it with the name of Lord Krishna, and then places it on the balance. That little leaf alone is enough to balance Krishna, and the scales move up. And Swami in his discourse would say that the form of the Lord can be matched only by the name of the Lord. And I think that is a very nice and beautiful message for us to take home as we bring this afternoon satsang to a close. Because in these times, we find it hard to see the form of the Lord. Therefore, the name of the Lord becomes even more important for us. Let's hold on to the name. Let us indulge in taking this name. Even if we are not enjoying it, let us realize that we are possibly in the medicine stage of taking the name. And let us be assured that soon enough we'll start relishing it, and we will be able to drink in the sweet rasa, just like this stanza says, "Gayanti bhakti rasapana prarishta chitta." Our chitta also will become prarishta. And again, like, you know, how you beautifully said, prarishta has two meanings. One is straightening and one is delighting. I think the straightening is the medicine part of the name, and the delighting is the sweet part of the name. So on that note, dear listeners, we'll bring this satsang to a close. We've got another 5 or 6 stanzas to cover, which we shall do so after the next fortnight, because next fortnight we will be dedicating it to the Conversations with Sai, that book. So we offer this at the lotus feet of our beloved Bhagwan. We hope that you all enjoyed it. Do write to us at listener@radiosai.org. We'll end with a bhajan on the other side of which you'll be joined by Brother Chandu in his segment, Love to Love.
Shri Sai Ram. We are delighted to share with you that on the auspicious day of Mahashivaratri 2019, Radio Sai offered at the lotus feet of Bhagwan a new YouTube channel dedicated solely to Sai Bhajans called Radio Sai Bhajans. This channel offers you specially recorded Prashanti Mandir Bhajans along with beautiful videos of Bhagwan.
जय कैलाश पते शिव शंकर
वरति पुरीश्वर साई गोपाला
वरति पुरीश्वर
कोदंड रामा कल्याण रामा
हरे कृष्णा Krishna, Krishna, Hare, Hare.
To enjoy this visual treat of Sai Bhajans, do subscribe to this new YouTube channel, Radio Sai Bhajans, and share this good news with your family and friends. Jai Sai Ram. You are listening to Radio Sai Thursday Live. Stay tuned.